Today on Movie World, as we talk about Booksmart, Aladdin, and John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or on the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings.
Hello.
I'm really excited about this show.
Me too.
Yeah, actually, they're all three movies are kind of, I have many opinions about
all of them. Are discussion worthy, yes.
But before we do that, Joe.
Oh my goodness.
Uh-oh.
I'm kind of disappointed with you.
Uh-oh.
Ask me why.
Why are you disappointed with me, Yazdi? Pray
because
tell.
I would have thought by now you'd be jumping up and down with this news.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, no, please don't. Don't open the door. Yazdi, shut that door.
No.
We know where this door is opening to.
Yes, we know. It's about, there's been news about Christopher Nolan.
Are you talking about Tenet, starring John David Washington and
Tenet Michael Caine and Robert Pattinson.
Aaron Taylor Johnson. That's not being shot by, it's got...
Kenneth Branagh, isn't it?
Doesn't have Hans Zimmer, unfortunately, as the... And it's supposedly Nolan's spy movie that's...
I think a spy movie would be great.
It's his...
I know all about...
It's his audition for James Bond.
Yeah.
The fact that I'm not sharing it with you is because...
I would poo-poo.
We are unworthy.
Two of you would spend the next 20 minutes beating up on me for being so excited.
Joe even noticed that it's
this
a palindrome.
That is coming out
Tenet.
In
oh, it is a palindrome.
2020 of July. Not that that date.
The countdown calendar has already started.
Not that I measure my life by intervals between Christopher Nolan movies, but I do.
And I'm excited because it also has Elizabeth Debicki, who was in Widows, and she's so good.
She's great.
And more importantly, it has Dimple Kapadia. Do you know Dimple Kapadia?
Does she?
From Bobby Fame.
Yeah.
Remember her?
Now, we have to tell you. Dimple Kapadia was like a bombshell.
I told
bombshell.
You some Indian guy was in it, Rashmi.
Yeah, Joe just said some Indian actor is in it. And I said, that's really racist. You would never say there is this American actor in a movie and expect me to guess. So anyway, it's Dimple Kapadia. So she was basically a bombshell in the 1970s and she did this epic... You know, real, like,
it was
like a
of
pinnacle
time.
Of its
right.
time movie called Bobby, B-O-B-B-Y. And that's the only film she did.
Until she came back.
So she did that movie. She was a teenager. This was like an outstanding hit of the 70s.
Huge hit, like complete, defined the generation.
Yeah, yeah. And then
she was
went away. She got married to one of...
To Rajesh Khanna, one of the big film stars, kind of like plucked her off and got married to her.
Wow.
Yeah, like he was like a Warren Beatty, I would say.
Correct.
Yeah. Married him.
Had two kids.
Yep.
And then...
Went away. Maybe 20 years later came back.
And she's been working since then. And she, by all accounts, is one of the most beautiful women in the world. Maybe not now.
Yeah.
But she is incredible.
So she's in Tenet.
She is in Tenet. I don't know how that happened, but...
That's very interesting.
What do you mean why that happened? Everyone wants to be in a Nolan movie, don't they?
I know, but it must be a very specific role to kind of, you know, pick her because, you know...
Yeah, I mean, the script is under lock and key right now, but all indications are that it's going to be some sort of espionage movie shot, I think, in 7 countries so far.
Woo-hoo!
So, yeah, it sounds like, again, the word on the street is that Nolan is doing his version of Bond. I don't think Barbara Broccoli has called him up yet to direct the Bond movie, although...
It's his audition, I think.
Sam Mendes, I think, is done with Bond, so...
Correct.
The role is open, but I think he is definitely... has always expressed some level of interest in doing a kind of a Bond movie. And I think he thought, to hell with it, I'll make my own.
I'm Inception very excited kind of like by the too. Cast. You know, I love Aaron Taylor Johnson. I love John David Washington is, I think,
I
becoming
know.
One of my favorites.
Yeah. No, I mean,
and like you said, you know.
A Nolan movie is always an event. So.
Well, it is when you live with Joe. Or you have Joe in your life, right? It's a big event.
Yes.
Can I just say... How much do the two of you know about any movie coming out in 2020 yet?
Well, Joe. I'm excited about the Tarantino, so I'm waiting.
Well, that's this year.
Yeah, that's this year. Next year. So I'm still on the Tarantino train.
My point is, a Nolan movie is always a big event, and one does tend to pay a little bit of attention to what he's doing. I think he's just the.
Casey, yes, I told you not to open the door.
Yes. Alas.
All right. Well, countdown begins July 17th, 2020. Mark your calendars. I already have.
See? She's gorgeous.
She is very, very...
Of course, that's probably from 20 years ago, but...
Yeah, she was gorgeous, yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
Okay, three movies to talk about today. So why don't we begin with the movie Booksmart and think, Yazdi, you're going to tell us about that?
Yes, so Olivia Wilde, who we have long liked, she's been in so many movies. That we've loved, Drinking Buddies, she was in Her, she's been in so many films. This is her directorial debut, which is amazing. Olivia Wilde is married to
Jason Sudeikis,
and they have two kids, and she's been in, you know, working constantly. I don't know when she found the time to direct a movie, but here she is. Her first movie, and it is written by Susanna Fogel, Emily Halpern, Sarah Haskins, and Katie Silberman. Katie Silberman gets the key screenplay credit, and the movie is based in the very familiar genre of teenage films. And on the eve of their high school graduation, two academic superstars, two girls who are, you know, at the top of their class, they who are best friends realize that they should have worked less and played more. And determined not to fall short of their peers, the girls try to cram 4 years of fun into one night. And the movie does play out pretty much as, within a fixed period of time. The two girls are played by Caitlin Dever and Beanie Feldstein. Caitlin Dever, we have seen her in a lot of movies, and not the least being Short Term 12. And Beanie Feldstein, we last saw almost stealing the movie in
Lady Bird. Yeah.
She's also notably the sister of Noah, who was in Superbad? Jonah Hill. She's Jonah Hill's sister.
She is?
She's Jonah Hill's sister.
I didn't know that.
Yes. The movie also stars Jason Sudeikis. It has Lisa Kudrow here in a short role. Along with Will Fort from SNL. The movie has Jessica Williams, who plays one of the teachers, Billy Lord, Mason Gooding, who is actually Cuba Gooding Jr.'s son. He plays Nick in the movie, if you remember Nick.
Oh, God.
Yes, that is Cuba.
This is like Nepotism City.
Yes, Nepotism City. And many other actors. So this movie is doing very well. Critically, it's 98%, I think, on the Tomato Meter.
Wow.
What do you guys think of Booksmart?
All right, so I'm gonna say I love this movie. I absolutely love this movie. And I think the great praise that it's getting as this generation's, you know, Clueless, Mean Girls, Superbad is absolutely well earned. This movie lives and dies by its main protagonists, and they are exceptional, both in the way that they portray their characters, but also in the chemistry and the way that best friends are. And this took me back to being at school and having that one person who you rely on to be your rock and your platform and your sounding board. And it made me laugh, belly laugh at times. It made me chuckle. And it really brought like some tears to my eyes at points as well. So absolutely brilliant. Love this.
Joseph?
So I didn't respond to it quite the same way that Rashmi did here. And I think let me just start off. It's a very, very funny movie. Olivia Wilde, considering that this is a debut directorial effort, has really done a very good job of keeping this movie's energy and pace and emotionality going all the way through it. So it feels very accomplished from a directorial perspective. I did feel like the movie was a little too inspired by Superbad. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very much that kind of crazy night of crazy events. And I felt in some ways that the movie kind of boils over. It's a little overcooked for me. It's not quite, it would have been improved with a little more restraint because again, some of the setups felt very contrived. The wonderful thing about Superbad is it felt like a crazy night, but we kind of believed every step of that journey as they kind of went along the way. Here, I really struggled to buy some of the setups, such as, you know, the there's a moment on a involving kind of a yacht and a birthday party. And,
but it's so funny.
It's very funny, but it failed to kind of bring me along with it at that point in time, whereas even though the setups in Superbad were so preposterous, I'm like, yep, that's what can happen when a night out goes wrong. So I liked it very much, though. I'm nitpicking. This is a very funny, very entertaining, and I love both leads to bits. They were amazing.
Yeah. Yasti.
I'm with Rashmi on this. I think this is the first great film of 2019, and I wrote that in my notebook, and then I realized that I said the same thing for. Do you remember which movie?
No, I'll find out what we've reviewed. But, carry on.
Get Out.
Yes.
Oh, Us.
Us. Yes, I really liked Us, but I think I actually like Booksmart maybe just a smidgen more than Us even. The reason why I like it is we talk about this all the time. I think this movie has that perfect trifecta. It's exceptionally well directed. It's exceptionally well acted, and it's really very sharply written. How many teenage comedies have we seen? How many? Like countless. And you know, you have to somehow do things. Either you bring real authenticity to it, or you have something new to say. You bring insight, and this movie does all of those things. So that actually the movie came off to me seeming rather new and fresh in terms of what it had to say. You know, we saw, God, I'm really blanking out. What was the movie with Greta Gerwig, with the girl's name?
Frances Ha.
Frances Ha. That was the only other movie I know of which was about a friendship between two girls. And this movie also is a friendship about two girls. And I think the gender almost doesn't matter, but it kind of makes the point that sometimes your friendships from school or college may be the most significant relationship in your life. And it's great that these two characters are so supportive of each other. They have their issues with each other, but they are absolutely there for each other. Now, even as I'm saying this, this sounds corny, but it's done with so much heart and so much authenticity. And I think the leads are amazing because I could sense even when Beanie Feldstein was saying some things, it came off authentic. Even while I was realizing that this dialogue should not work, it really shouldn't work. Some of it, what she was asked to do and say, you know, would not have worked on paper, but these actors really invested in it. And the movie kind of has a really nice flow. It's really all about this one night. And it even funnily reminded me of Crown Wick. Remember the movie we saw at Tribeca about one night?
Yeah.
And, you know, in Los Angeles, where these two cops run into more ridiculous situation than another.
Correct. Yeah, it's a good.
But I just like that it all came together so nicely. It's all very organic. And what I really liked about the movie is that within a period of less than 2 hours, it created this world peopled by 10 to 12 characters. By the time the movie was over, you knew something or most things about all of these characters. These were all fully formed characters. None of them were props. So it's primarily about these two characters, but all their high school friends surrounding them, you get to know them, you get to understand them, you know, and there are all these archetypes, right? There are these, drama school majors, and then there are these sporty ones, and there's the jock, and there's all, and there, it creates this high school atmosphere, but they're well written, well fleshed out characters.
Well, and the genius of it is that you have the jock, but the jock is not just single dimension as it normally is in most high school movies, right? So here we have a jock, But there's actually something else to him as well.
Correct.
And so that's what I found was, because people aren't single dimensional. We're all right. multidimensional. We're labeled as things, but we're actually something else as well. That was the genius of this movie. Yeah.
Like every like other teenage geeks, movie.
But they're actually not geeks.
Correct.
They're actually, they play against the geek type in some ways.
Yeah, they're not outsiders. They have chosen to be outsiders because they want to concentrate on their studies. But when they do decide to show up and have fun, they are welcomed with open arms. So any other teenage movie would have treated them as,
like
you
the
know,
nerds.
Like the nerds.
Yeah.
And right. the jock would have made fun of
sure.
them. But the jock actually is genuinely interested and he's, you know, he's like, hey, you've shown up here. We thought you'd be studying. And, you know, he wants to know more about them. And I also like how casually the film treats, you know, one of the leads. She's in love with another girl. And no big deal is made about it at
no,
all.
No, I love
it's
that.
It's just so casual. It's part of, you know, it could be anything. So there's a lot of maturity. There's a lot of it feels of the moment in terms of all the other characters. I don't know. It reminded me of, you know, Lady Bird a little bit reminded me of
I think
Clueless.
It was better. I think
mean
it was
Girls.
Better
yeah,
than
mean
La-
Girls,
Lady Bird.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High, all of those. And it kind of ups them. And it's, I think to excel in a genre that is so overused is pretty good. And I'm going to start a petition right now for Best Director for Olivia Wilde. So
here's
yeah.
the other genius thing about it, right? Is that... At 17 or 18 years old, we think we know everything. These characters think they know everything. And so we're viewing the world through their lens. And then when you get towards the end, you realize they don't know anything and they realize they don't know anything. And that's what's really smart about it, right? Because as an older person having gone through this, you see their world as they see their world in some ways. You know, we're not just viewing, we're not just looking at them. We're kind of in their world with them. And it did that really, really well.
Yeah. And again, Beanie Feldstein.
Oh, she's
amazing.
Amazing.
But
amazing.
Not a single fat joke in the movie. Good for them. That's good writing. You know, that would have been so easy, you know,
yeah.
to make her the butt of those jokes, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
there isn't any of that. So it really bypasses.
She's almost very attractive. She's kind
yeah.
of like the attractive one of the pair in a sense,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
She's almost made to be the glamorous one of the two.
But that's not to take away from what Caitlin Dever does
fantastic.
With her role. Because again, I think that she has kind of a lot less of the, you know, she's almost playing the straight guy at some point throughout this too, the comedic Beanie Feldstein. But she holds her own
totally.
Really well. And in many ways, you know, she's given the balance of, you know, the movie being a bit more about her, even though the Beanie Feldstein character gets more of the jokes.
Well, she's the arc, right? She's got the biggest
Correct.
Arc in the movie. And
so it's done very nicely.
I just think it's so well realized.
Yeah, it's very well judged.
So neither of you felt that it was a little overstuffed? I mean, that was my only issue with it. It was, again, you mentioned Cranvick. We talk about this night where so many things happened, you know. So Cranvick's a movie that anyone listening to this probably hasn't seen because it was only available at Tribeca Film Fest. But it was just, you know, this kind of crazy night where, you know, umpteen things happen one after another. This normally would happen over the course of, you know, a week or a month or whatever. And that was my only thing here. I mean, you know, there's a scene here involving drug use. Well, you know, boy, those drugs wear off really quickly. You know, I mean, again, it's because we take it feels very nitpicky, but it's the kind of thing that distracted me from the moment because I'm like, if they really had, you know, taken certain substances, they might be struggling for a few more hours than the kind of 20-minute effect that the drug had. So these, again, nitpicky as I am, it took me out of the moment because I was like, oh, okay, I understand why that was there and I understand why we need to move on from that. But it just feels overstuffed with these ideas. And I wish it had a little bit more time to breathe between set pieces. Mm. That's all, you know.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think it's the premise
exhausting.
Of the movie, though. I mean, that's the whole
sure.
premise is that it's one night of adventure. And does it go overboard with some of them? Yeah, I can grant you that. But I was having so much fun, and I kept waiting for it to stumble, and it never stumbled.
Yes.
And that's what, you know, got me going. I'm like, it's going to stumble any minute now. It's going to kind of do the obvious thing here. And at every point, it kind of just shucked it off. Nope, we're not going to do this. We're going to do this other thing. So,
yeah. I mean, to me, some of the scenes, I mean, when I think back to something like Eighth Grade, which,
stunning.
You know, again, very, very stunning. It played, that was more straight. This, I would say, was on par with that. Especially having been a, you know, 17, 18 year old girl with a best friend who you believe is the world for you and the center of your universe. So it captured for me that very special relationship that two girls can have, non-romantic, at a certain age when, you know, the world is ahead of you and how you totally depend on each other and how you literally can spend, you know, all day together at school and then you come home and then you can't wait to get on the telephone and speak to that person again, right? I mean, well, it just captures that.
I just happen to know your best friend from school.
Yes. And
as I was looking at this movie, I saw very much the two of you.
Yes.
In these characters.
Those situations, exactly.
Just the whole setup of
exactly.
it.
Exactly, you know, exactly. Now you're going to make me cry. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it does. Yeah. It captures that feeling of the one person who you depend on so wholly.
Right.
And you rely on, and yet that whole scene, I won't even spoil it because, you know, and it's also that what it captured really well was two people who know each other so well, but are kind of frightened to say some things to each other for fear of what it will do.
Right. Right.
So.
And, you know, I really like the world it creates. There is an Asian guy in the group. There is a African-American guy. There is, you know, it's just such a nice little environment. And, you know, there is a running gag in the movie about this one girl who keeps showing up everywhere.
Yeah, that was a bit overplayed.
Gigi pretty much stole the movie. But you were talking
Billy
about
Lord,
nepotism central. But she is Carrie Fisher's daughter.
Right.
So this is like, you know, it's amazing how Olivia Wilde has gotten all these people together. And again, about Short Term 12, I read somewhere that, you know, how cool would it be if every person who was in Short Term 12 went on to win the Oscar, because Brie Larson won one, Rami Malek won one.
Yep.
You know, so she was here as...
And she was exceptional. She was the child who comes in, remember?
Right.
Who has the problems.
Yeah. Lakeith Stanfield was in...
Lakeith,
Yeah, so... Wow.
So anyway.
Our friend, Short Term 12.
Yeah, no, I mean, the movie is extraordinarily fun. And I think you both made the point about the characters. It's really, really, it's the chemistry, not just between the two leads, but between every single touch point of other characters that exist within that, you know, zany little world of that was created. Good stuff. So I'm going to wrap it up, just give you my thoughts. Very, very funny. A little, just a hair overcooked for my particular taste. I like things a little more al dente. So for me, it's going to be an 8 out of 10.
Yes, D.
Yeah, I'm going to, I think this will probably be on my list of best movies of the year, unless things really change. It does not take one wrong step. I think the only thing working against the movie right now is it gets a little raunchy. And so I wouldn't necessarily recommend it to, you know, my aunt or my grandmother, or, you know, I wouldn't watch it with my parents or any of that.
It's a super bad crowd.
Yeah, it's a super bad crowd.
If somebody...
I think it's R. It's an R rating.
It's good. I think it deserves it.
I mean, it's not... There's
you should know what you're getting.
You think it is. It's beyond R. I mean, it's strong in places.
Yeah. But I think this movie is the cat's meow. I really, really enjoyed it. I was just amazed.
It's an awe.
At every point, I was amazed at where the movie was going. In spite of the high expectations, it fulfilled them and then some. It is, I think, the first or second great film of 2019. I'm going to give it the rare 9 out of 10.
Wow.
A++, which translates to a 9 out of 10 from me as well.
Fantastic.
Really good.
Yeah, and it came out of nowhere. I mean, I really didn't know much about this movie in the work up to it. I don't feel it's been heavily promoted. And that's, you know, I hope it gets its its recognitions.
Both leads are fantastic. Critically,
but I also I want to see it succeed commercially.
Yeah.
You know, because it's at least as good as Superbad, and
yeah,
and that's become kind of this little classic.
Which is her brother.
Which is remarkable.
Beanie Feldstein's brother.
Yeah.
She's amazing. She's amazing. I mean, we mentioned at the front yesterday, you mentioned that she stole the show in Lady Bird, or you said it, one of you said it. Yeah. She did. For me, in Lady Bird, she was actually the star of that movie, yeah. Right? There's something so likable about her.
Okay, moving on then. Movie number two of the week is Aladdin.
Okay, let me just rub my lamp over here. this really does need no introduction. However...
Never heard of it.
Yeah, however, a kind-hearted street urchin and a power-hungry grand vizier vie for a magic lamp that has the power to make their deepest wishes come true. So this is directed by Guy Ritchie, and the screenplay is written by Guy Ritchie and John August. But, you know, this is an old classic fairy tale. And it stars Will Smith, Mina Massoud as Aladdin, Naomi Scott, and a whole host of others. Whole host of other people. So,
and Yazdi, have you seen Aladdin?
Yes. So who wants to start? Yazdi, why don't you go first? What did you think of this version of Aladdin? There have been 100 versions of Aladdin, but I guess the one we remember most is the animation that came out like way back in the 90s,
yeah.
With Robin Williams as the
iconic performance as a genie.
I think that was maybe his comeback, right?
Yeah, and
as genie.
Yeah, and I think this movie follows those beats almost. Yeah. To a fall. I mean, it's exactly the same story. It's got Agrabah and, you know, Prince Ali and Princess Jasmine and all of this. So I think it is the live action version of the Disney animated film, which had, where the genie was famously played by, Robin Williams. It's my fear. This movie was getting really bad press. And my fear was that it would be an absolutely awful film. It's not an absolutely awful film. I don't think Guy Ritchie, who directed it, is capable of making a truly bad, bad, like unwatchable movie. I think, as many reviewers have said, if you have kids of a certain age, they will really enjoy it. You know, it's very bright and colorful. And I do like the visuals, especially as CGI as they might be, the early parts when we see the city of Agrabah. So I think the visuals have been well realized. The other plus I would give for the movie, and I know I'm just summing up, but I'll be quick, is that I think they did wise to pick the leads that they did. I think both of them have really good chemistry, and at least, you know, they were somewhat ethnically correct. What does not work is, and we can talk about it, is, you know, their choice for the genie this time around. I think Will Smith tries really hard. It just comes off it came off very labored for me. I don't know why he had to be blue. I know that's how it was in the animated movie, but we can talk more about that. And also the whole movie kind of felt, you know, the folks at Pop Culture Happy Hour, the podcast I listened to, made a very good point that when you make an animated movie, it can be very zippy and light on its touch and deft, and it can move because it doesn't need to follow the laws of physics. You know, anything, people can fly, things can happen. When you try to replicate that in with real people, you can't make people, you know, slide into the sky. You can use CGI, but still it comes off a little bit more labored. So the pace seems very long, drawn out. And so, frankly, I could feel the labor underneath. I could feel how hard they were trying to make the wheels turn, and they were quite not turning. So it kind of felt like the movie was being forced ahead through sheer will. That's how I felt. So it's a very mixed bag for me.
Sheer Will Smith. Go.
I'll start with Will Smith, because I think, you know, if you like Will Smith, you know, what you get here is Will Smith as a genie. And, you know, it's, if you don't like Will Smith, then, you know, the movie's going to grate you. And I'm not a huge fan of his. I find him to be, you know, just a little forced in this particular role, trying to be funnier than he inherently is. I mean, I think the Robin Williams genie is a very hard thing to live up to. You know, Robin Williams did a lot of ad lib with that particular role, and you can see it and you can feel it. And Robin Williams was inherently just you know, incredibly funny. So a lot of that movie's charm, I mean, you know, if I think back to Aladdin, I think of two things: A Whole New World, that song that was, you know, so iconic, and the Robin Williams genie. Almost everything else is kind of a lost memory for me. I just wish with this movie, with Guy Ritchie at the helm, why did they choose to do such a faithful reproduction of the animated movie? Like, you know, these Disney live actions have gone one of two ways. Jungle Book, I think, was done with such a beautiful touch. They chose to not replicate the songs. They chose to build a little more depth and richness into the characters than we saw in the literally two-dimensional cartoon versions. Beauty and the Beast, I thought, was more along these lines, where they chose to do this kind of frame-by-frame, you know, scene-by-scene remake. And then Kenneth Branagh's Cinderella, worked wonderfully because of its, you know, completely uncynical retelling of that story. Here, I just felt that, you know, if you're going to hire a director like Guy Ritchie, then let him do Guy Ritchie things. You know, let him bring his edge to the role. But I think he felt they were too scared of making the franchise incompatible with, you know, the core audience, which in this case is going to be, you know, 6 to 16-year-old children. And they didn't let the movie breathe. And as a result, it kind of felt very, you know, by the numbers, very, very vanilla, very, very much a missed opportunity. You know, again, with live action, songs can work, but I don't know that the songs worked here. You know, again, I think, like you said, Yazdi, the labored, analogy is very good. So I'm a little disappointed with the lack of ambition here. You know, as a family entertainment piece, I think it's fine. You know, I think you'll take the kids, you know, they'll have a good time. No one will be bored. No one will want to scratch their eyes out. But it just feels like a hugely missed opportunity, because, you know, the Aladdin character could be done with a lot of mischief. You know, he's got, there's a lot of rich material to play there. Last thing I'll say before I shut up is I did enjoy the Princess Jasmine role here. I think the movie was more about her this time around than Aladdin, right? I feel like they brought out the strength in the female princess. Maybe that's, again, the Disney princess franchise is very big here, but she to me was the movie's, you know, lead protagonist. And I think, you know, the song that they inserted that I don't remember being...
No, it wasn't.
It's a new song. Yeah.
Yeah, was probably Speechless. One of the stronger points of the movie. So frustrating. Frustratingly not as good as it could have been.
Yeah, I wish this movie had never been made.
Ooh, okay.
There was really no need. And I think even though this is classed as live action, most of it's CG. So what's the point? The best thing about this movie was the monkey, Abu, and the rug. Right? None of which are real actors. The rug and the monkey were the best. For me, where this fails hugely is it lacks joy. It's so phoned in for me. And there was nothing Guy Ritchie about this movie. You know, I'm a big Guy Ritchie fan until King Arthur and The Legend of the Sword. But even then, you could see the Guy Ritchie thumbprint on that movie, which is a legend. And so I would have thought that we would have got some of that playfulness that Guy Ritchie's so good at. We got nothing, Guy Ritchie. This was just so phoned in for me. And I'm with you guys. Why is the genie blue? And why was he so muscly? And when Will Smith wasn't trying to do his impression of Robin Williams, he was playing a camp gay man. I mean, it was just terrible. It was terrible. I felt embarrassed.
Wow.
In fact, the best time was when Will Smith wasn't the genie, when he was almost pretending to be the human,
right.
That were the best parts. I just hated this. It was horrible. I was just dying. I wanted to leave the cinema. Terrible. Wow, and gosh. I love Aladdin. I think that's the other piece, right? The animation Aladdin is, I have such fond memories of that movie. That this just kind of poured like gasoline over that and like lit it into this horrible explosion of like terribleness. Just say one more thing. The only thing that saved this for me was the costumes, which I really liked. And the fact that they chose to use all brown people, which I thought was very brave of them again.
I think Joe said it exactly right. I think Disney needs to figure out what kind of movie they want to make. So they, if you want 100% just remake, like shot by shot remake,
Beauty
live action
Beast.
Version, like Beauty and the Beast,
yeah.
or even Jungle Book, you know, you hire the right kind of directors, filmmakers, craftsmen, and make, you know, make it that way. This movie kind of is struggling. It's struggling under many things. Number one is it's struggling under the shadow or the ghost of Robin Williams. And it's impossible. It's impossible because there is no other Robin Williams to kind of redo it. So they should have just walked away from the whole Robin Williams piece and just let it be a Will Smith be a bit. But even that, I agree, the part when the genie comes out, first of all, there is the uncanny valley, because they've done something to his face. I don't know if they have
and
made
his
him
body.
Younger, but it just, it looked, I don't know, there was something creepy about it.
It didn't look right at all.
His face didn't look right at all. But my point is, you're hiring, you know, you're hiring Will Smith. Let him be Will Smith. Okay, one thing. Second thing, the only thing that they've changed in the whole movie, seemingly, is that, you know, Jasmine has some agency, right? She sings a song. But at the end of the day, it's just like a token thing. She sings the song, she screams at the villain, and then Aladdin comes and saves the day. If they really wanted to change this, why not make Jasmine the lead character in this particular retelling? You know, let the story be driven by her. And, you know, she of all of them seemed to be the only one who could really sing.
Yes.
So, you know, and she looks like $1 million. She looks really good. Actually, both the actors, the male and the female.
They look really good.
They did good casting. And there was some chemistry between them. So why... I thought the movie worked the best when it was about her or her and him. I really bought the premise of this street rat falling in love with this princess. It's all very,
it's cute,
you know, Roman holiday-esque and all of that. And then all this CGI nonsense comes in and kind of feels like, it feels plastic. I mean, once the genie arrived, all the CGI looked kind of really cheap and I don't know. So I think the movie is searching for identity. I mean, either you update it and make it, you know, let it go all the way. Let her be the driving force, or then you stick with just a shot by shot remake. This in between thing kind of is neither here nor there.
And if you're going to hire Guy Ritchie, let him be Guy Ritchie.
Right, let him be Guy Ritchie.
Don't force this guy to do a studio movie. One last twist of the knife from me is the casting of Jafar. He lacked any kind of sinister nature. I mean, the original Jafar was very, very frightening. I think maybe voiced by Jeremy Irons or something like that. And he was truly evil and truly terrifying. Here, he was so kind of soft-spoken. And I also felt that we didn't really know why he was angry. I mean, there's this whole nonsense about him not being number one in the room. But, I mean, is that really the reason to kind of, you know, take out the Sultan and go all kind of crazy, you know, just because you weren't number one? I feel like there was no background there that I felt, you know, Jafar kind of missed.
Yeah.
You know, his motivations were not clear to me, and he just was not sinister enough. He's supposed to be this, you know, sorcerer type, and I thought if I, you know, stole his, you know, teddy bear, he might start crying. I mean, it just was not afraid of him.
I remember his staff, which has the serpent's head on it, was so scary in the animated movie.
Absolutely.
But it's not. It just seems silly in this one.
Yeah.
And not to get on my political soapbox, but, you know, this, it's Aladdin. Aladdin means son of the faith, right? Or, faith of God. That's what it means. Prince Ali. I mean, this is a very, very Islamic milieu, right? This is,
yes.
And Disney's trying so hard to kind of steer away from making anything remotely seem like it's an Islamic world.
Yes.
And it's almost some kind of...
But they have brown people, Yasti. Come on.
They have brown people, but
it's some... That's a big change.
Some kind of Middle Eastern way. You know, I know the animated movie did the same thing, but I think there's so much going on right now. There was an opportunity perhaps to kind of, you know, show Islam in a different light, or at least even acknowledge that it is set within that world. That was one thing. And then the second thing is, yes, I'm thankful they didn't have, like, you know,
Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson playing Princess Jasmine. But, you know, they go to a Bollywood number at one point.
And Juno Temple plays Princess Jasmine.
No, but Bollywood is like 100 miles away or 1,000 miles away from the Middle East. And it was just all, you know, all cultural inappropriation.
It really was.
It was not just inappropriation, but it was all mangled as well. So, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, so I think we've pooped on this.
I was going to say, we've verbally torn that a new one. Let's score it. So Rashmi, what's your number?
Okay, despite the saturated color, this movie is so dull. Watch the original animation with the wonderful Robin Williams in it instead. 2 out of 10.
Oh.
Horrible. Yeah, Steve, I wanted this to be over.
I'll give it a 5 out of 10 because I think if you have little ones, they will enjoy it. It's very colorful. And if you don't have memory of the original animated movie to compare it with, it'll hold up reasonably well, I think. I think adults will just be cringing through much of it. 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
A very generous 5, by the way.
It's a 5 for me for exactly the same reason. I think if you know, watch the cartoon instead. I mean, really, that's just a much better experience all around. But, you know, if you have to watch the latest, greatest thing because the 5-year-olds are saying, I want to see Aladdin, and go let them see this one, they'll have perfectly good time with it. But everyone else, yeah, it's kind of forgettable. Too bad. I am very, very afraid for The Lion King now. But I think in the hands of Jon Favreau...
I agree. Given he did The Jungle Book, yeah. I'm hopeful.
But I just want... I hope that he's not in any way forced by the studio to do, you know, just a very literal retelling of what we've already seen. Because that seems to be the way that these live-action remakes are going. When you look at the Jungle Book is a single standout, but the others have been really, you know, quite dull. And again, Cinderella maybe for its sincerity. Moving on to something very different then is John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum. Quite a mouthful for a movie title, but there it is with its colon and hyphen. I think here on the podcast, I think we have unanimously been big fans of the John Wick series. Maybe you rushed me a little less so, but in the first movie, his dog was killed and he went on a rampage to get revenge for that. And in the second movie, somebody scratched his car. He went on a similar rampage to make amends for that.
And he did get another dog.
At the end of that movie, he was excommunicated from the body of assassins to which he belongs. And we get from that John Wick Chapter 3, which continues almost exactly where movie number 2 left off. So, again, the words here are in this third installment of the adrenaline-fueled action franchise, super assassin John Wick returns with a $14 million price tag on his head and an army of bounty-hunting killers on his trail. After killing a member of the shadowy International Assassins Guild, the High Table, John Wick is excommunicado, but the world's most ruthless hitmen and women await his every turn. It's directed by Chad Stahelski, written by Derek Kolstad, Chris Collins, Mark Abrams, Shay Hatton. Stars Keanu Reeves, Halle Berry, Lawrence Fishburne as the primary leads. We also get contributions from Asia Kate Dillon, Lance Reddick.
Ian McShane.
Ian McShane is here.
Angelica Houston.
And many others.
Lawrence Fishburne.
Did I mention? I mentioned him. So I was genuinely excited to see this, having really enjoyed one, enjoyed number 2, but slightly less so. I was hoping for big things with John Wick Chapter 3. What did you think of John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum?
Love, 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 love this movie. I love John Wick. I love the world. I love the huge body count. I love everything about this movie. What's not to love?
Yes, Steve.
So Chad Stahelski has directed all 3 of the John Wick movies. I think he made the first one kind of, you know, just as a lark, and then it became this huge big cult hit, and kind of he's under this pressure to kind of keep delivering. And I don't think anybody expected this to be a franchise, but it's turned out to be that way. There was a lot of expectation around it. The movie absolutely delivers. I have a big, big issue with one of the things in the movie, but I like how, we talked about this earlier, I like how the movie has, over these 3 movies, or these three films created its own world with its own set of rules, with its own kind of governance and its own...
Or not.
Yeah, or not. And it kind of widens this universe slowly. I think the second one did a much bigger job. This one kind of brings it back into New York City a little bit. But I have great respect for what they've done, and who would have thought. But yeah, I'm a fan. But I do have one big problem with the movie.
Just given that you didn't like number two.
Well, no, that's not true. Number two, the only problem with number two was that it felt like a bigger dose of you know, foie gras compared to number one. It was good stuff, but you can have too much of a good thing. And I was kind of worried that this movie was going to do the same thing, right? You know, there's only so many spoonfuls of caviar that you can have before you're kind of sick of caviar, whereas the first taste might be like, wow. So this movie, I was ready for it this time, I think. And I think the reason that this one works so much better than number two is A, you know, expect kind of ready for it, right? We know what to expect. It's going to be bombastic throughout, and it absolutely delivers that on that. But this movie is so freaking well choreographed. You know, it's almost balletic. Like the fight scenes are inventive. They're visceral.
Beautiful to watch.
They continue pushing the pain envelope to the extent that, especially in the first third of the movie, the number of times I winced and jumped and squirmed and closed my eyes, and it was all kind of a giddy, fun, enjoyable.
There were gasps at some points. There was like unified gasps in the audience in the screening we watched.
I absolutely marveled at this movie's ability to entertain me in that kind of way. And it's done, you know, there's movies like The Raid from a year or two ago. But there's just, and it's not frenetic in the sense of, you know, it's like pow, pow, pow. Everything is very deliberately shot. You can tell exactly what's going on. You can see whose arm just got broken, whose eye just got gouged out, it's so inventive, and its ability to continually reinvent the fight scene, is remarkable. So for that reason alone, I love the movie. Plot-wise, it also was very engaging. You know, all the way through, I kind of cared for the fate of our heroes. I wondered how they were going to get themselves out of successively more complicated and difficult jams, and I really enjoyed the way that they resolved and got their way out of those particular situations. So, yeah, all in all, this was just fabulous. I've enjoyed this movie probably more than anything else that I've seen this year, and that's. I'm not going to call it the year's great movie, but in terms of raw bum in my seat, popcorn, fun fest, this was my stuff.
Yeah, there's a richness to the world that this one brings, especially there's like this pool of kind of admins, and they're all very Dieter Von Teese, neo...
very retro.
Yeah, retro, neo-burlesque. In the way that they're dressed and their tattoos and the attention to detail.
And Julie Walters is the lead.
It's the attention to detail in this world is phenomenal in terms of like the tokens and the coins and the way that the world interacts with each other in this larger world which we all live in. And so it feels very Matrixy, but not.
If I may interrupt, I mean, I think this movie benefits in a way that number two didn't, by we now know this world, right? John Wick 1 was just kind of a really...
Like what? Yeah.
Thematically and tonally kind of odd to us, right?
Yeah.
There wasn't much in the way of background as to what was going on. We were learning about it as we went through and kind of puzzling our way through that.
Yeah.
Number two kind of established the world. Number three lives in that world. So
yeah.
I think that's the sensation you had there. That this world is now real, a place for us. And we want to spend time in it.
Right. But it's also just how beautifully realized this whole world is in terms of their innovation of technology, right? So we're living in a highly technical world at the moment. But this world exists in parallel without being detected by anyone who doesn't know it. And that's what I really enjoy is like, no one else around them knows what's really going on, but things are going on, you know, under our noses in a sense. And it's so ridiculous at times. Like Keanu Reeves is on a horse in like, you know, I imagine it's kind of like Queens, I think, in the middle of New York. Like it's ridiculous, but it so works. And again, just the innovation in the fight scenes. I actually did a body count. I won't say what the body count is because I don't want to spoil it for, I don't want people to be waiting for the number, but it's huge. It's huge. Like 3 digits huge. It's great. It's great. I can't say enough about, like, Keanu Reeves inherently to me isn't a good actor.
Yeah,
right?
So, yeah.
He's really not, but this totally plays to his strength.
Right. Let's talk about, I think, so the movie is being directed by Chad Stahelski, and Chad Stahelski used to be Keanu Reeves' stunt double on the Matrix movies.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so he...
You're full of trivia today. I love it. Yazdi's E today.
No, E Hollywood, no. So, they clearly, I mean, he knows the physicality of Keanu Reeves, and he understands the character. And I think the reason why John Wick works and many other movies that Keanu Reeves does, smaller movies he does, you know, he's been doing the last few years, they almost always go to Netflix or whatever, they don't make such a big splash, is because I think this person who has worked with him very physically understands, you know, Keanu Reeves' character. He's not a very verbose person. You ask Keanu Reeves to you know, speak off large, you know, pages and pages of dialogue, and it comes off comical. I mean, have you seen him in that, what was it, the Martin Scorsese movie with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Encyclopedic Gatsby has failed.
Yes.
No. It was a Dracula. So he was in
Dracula.
He was awful in it.
He was terrible.
He played the Buddha.
That's
okay,
right.
In Bernardo Bertolucci's movie. And it was laughable. So he, the less Keanu Reeves speaks, the better he is. And he is such a stayed, quiet man. I mean, the fun part of John Wick is he just wants to be left alone. He, from the first movie, he just wants to be left alone. He's grieving his wife and just leave him alone, but people won't leave him alone. And that's where, you know, all of the fun in the movie comes on. As much as I love Chad Stahelski, the one big issue I have with this movie is it seems like going from number one to number two to number three, the action is top notch, right? He's kind of pushing the envelope every time. I mean, this movie is just a series of incredible set pieces, one after the other. Okay.
Yeah.
Him on a motorcycle, him on a horse, him in this amazing shop full of knives and guns that he has to fight with people. It's just a set. It's a series of set pieces. So you amp up the movie, you know, going from John Wick 2 to 3, you kind of create more, creative action scenes and set pieces and so forth. But unfortunately, I think the director is also kind of a little bit insecure. So he feels the need to amp up the violence as well. And I really felt, I mean, I went back and watched John Wick 2. This one really is so much more violent. And I know it's stylish. I know it's fun. But I think, again, like this other podcast that I listen to all the time, Pop Culture Happy Hour, they mentioned this, and I agree. I think if there's one thing John Wick 3 proves, it's that you cannot get an NC-17 for violence alone. Because if you could get anything harsher than an R rating based on violence, then this movie should have got it. I mean, it's really brutal. I mean, you know, you push, you know, a knife in somebody's eye, and then you beat at the hilt so it comes out through the other end. And I wish they didn't have to do that. This movie is clever on its own. It doesn't need to amp kind of the violence card more and more. So that is my only disappointment.
I disagree. I think in order for it to have the same, and you know, maybe it's just a darkness that is Hollywood today that we,
or a desensitization.
Going to say that it's getting to the point where we are kind of desensitized to
one of those people who was putting my eyes on my face. I couldn't watch it, and I think I'm reasonably
but it's done in a way that isn't horrific, and by that I'm saying, you know, yes, there's all of these, you know, breaks and injuries and but it's never done in a way that's kind of traumatic to us as individuals.
Really? It's not traumatic
the interior psychopath within me is
I say this with a lot of respect. I just think I don't want to see John Wick 4 where he's decapitating people.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
I don't want the movie by itself is, this universe is so clever. You don't need to push the violence.
I hope that we get more of the rules of the universe in number 4 than the violence. I agree with what Yazdi's saying.
But the violence isn't played for...
It's played for entertainment.
It's like The Raid. Made a good comparison. I think it's just like The Raid.
For sure. But I mean, what I want to say is it is played for entertainment, and that kind of makes it less violent in some ways, because it's like this big, huge dance of choreography of.
So I think what it's trying to get across, I understand what Yazdi's saying, and where does it go next in terms of violence, right?
Right.
Like, do you just come with like a Elon Musk's blowtorch and just blowtorch everyone, right? That gives us satisfaction. I think what I get from it, though, Yazdi, is it's kind of kill or be killed. It's relentless. Like, I think what it's showing is that this world, the end point is always you have to kill the person. There's no second chance, in a sense, right?
Yeah.
There is no other choice. That's what I get from it. Like, it's almost like Terminator-esque in that way.
But to make the point, I mean, you talk about decapitations in John Wick 4, right? This movie will never do that, because a decapitation is not the kind of event that we all relate to. What we'll see is somebody's ear getting sliced off with some kind of horror, you know, a sword or something like that.
Yeah, because, dental floss.
No, because it's a lot more inventive than,
sure,
you know, just dispatching with people in, you know, with one blow. It's like, how does one...
And these are trained killers, right? What we're seeing is... These, I think it's that kill. I really believe it's like that kill or be killed.
Yeah.
It's a fight to the death. There is no other option for any of these assassins. These are all assassins. That's the world we're in.
And it's comic book violence.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it really is.
So can I just ask you, what did you think of Halle Berry? Like, what is she doing here? I didn't mind her being here, but I was kind of like, really? Do we need that?
I could see her face while she was doing all the action, so it seems to be perceivably her. So I was just, I mean, you know, I mean, she's there for a portion of the movie, and she kicks some ass. It didn't bother me. I mean, considering she must be the same age as Keanu Reeves, you know, she's pretty fit. So I didn't mind it. I wasn't particularly blown away by it, but it was good.
Yeah.
I got the sense that she knew exactly the kind of movie she was in, because she played it just right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not, you know, an over serious performance. It was, you know, a very, you know, stylized,
yeah,
you know, stylish, mm-hmm, performance in that, you know, there's a little nudge and a wink behind the whole preposterousness of the whole thing, but it's played straight. So
yeah,
I kind of enjoyed her there. I mean, she was, not especially Halle Berry. I felt like you could replace her with just about any other female Hollywood actress of that age and nature.
You know, yeah. I do like also how we don't know names of people. So, you know, there's the adjudicator and the director and the TikTok man. And, you know, like, oh, I could go on forever about the world. The world is just so amazing to me.
And it's the slow reveal of the nature of the world that's always fascinating, because I think, again, it clearly exists in somebody's mind, because it every element is introduced with this wonderful integrity in that it fits exactly the way it should. And it is exactly the way you expect it to be, even though you didn't know that fact about the world. You know, the fact that the operators, they're using like retro computers.
Right. Yeah, well, that's what I was saying.
It's
in this
a Commodore
world of
64.
Technology.
Like, for a nerd of my age, you know, like, a Commodore 64 puts a smile on my face. It's a computer that I grew up with. It's so inherently outdated for the kind of things that they're putting it to use for, but
it
fits brilliantly in within the universe. So
yeah. Okay, should we score this one?
We should.
Like, have we talked for this about an hour now?
We were an hour into this podcast, so we should probably wrap this one up.
Yes, he had something final to say. Go on.
8 out of 10. It's so well created a movie. It really furthers the universe of this. There's nothing quite like it. I mean, you know, a smart action movie is sort of a, you know, it's sort of a contradiction these days. You know, you get a lot of dumb action movies, and even the big franchises are just interested in, you know, things blowing up and so forth. And there's so much cleverness here. There's so much creativity in terms of how each of these fight scenes are played out. And even as they're preposterous, they're beautifully put together. You can see the, you know, the geography of what's going on. They're very clear to see. I love that. I don't know if it was CGI or if such a place actually exists, but there is this whole, where the whole climax plays out is this glass and mirror kind of steel mirror kind of building.
Yeah, it's Bruce Lee Game of Death.
It was Enter the Dragon. So I think, again, you can see kind of what the homages are. It's from this Bruce Lee times. And there was actually, interestingly, in the second John Wick, again, there was like this room full of mirrors where you couldn't see where somebody was. And I think it's great that Keanu Reeves at this point in his career, if you would have asked anyone 30 years ago when he was doing Bill and Ted's, you know, adventure, if he would have any kind of permanence in the film industry, everybody would have laughed. But it's good that he's found his niche. And, you know, he really is believable as this tired, exhausted person who just wants to be left alone. So don't underestimate the value of Keanu Reeves. And he also does a lot of these amazing stunts. So God bless his personal trainer.
Rashmi.
So I really liked it. I did have a problem with the violence, but we've talked about it.
Love, 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 love. 9 out of 10.
Wow.
I love this movie. And if I had to choose between Booksmart and John Wick, they're on par for me for whole different reasons. But I enjoyed both as much. This is so good. I was so excited to watch this and it didn't disappoint me at all. I love this movie.
Yeah, this was giddy fun for me from start to finish. And it just opens.
I didn't want it to end.
Well, you're lucky. I think the John Wick 4 has been greenlit. So, you know, we will get more.
In a couple of years.
In a couple of years' time. So, yeah, absolutely. The fact that this has become a thing is like, it makes me happy. It makes me smile. So, yep, it's made it onto the Joe Blu-ray pre-order list.
Yay!
That's generally my measure of a movie that gets a 9 out of 10 or higher. And that's where it's going to be, 9 out of 10. Loved it too. Okay. We've rabbled on here. We're an hour running time. So thank you if you're still listening. We appreciate you. Thank you hopefully you enjoyed listening to this as much as we enjoyed gabbling about it for the last hour or so. So, yeah, too many movies, too little time. Do find us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, mail@movierollers.com as always if you have any comments or feedback for the show. Until the next podcast, too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.